Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the BRC's Trade Policy Podcast. I'm William Madison. In this edition, it's all about the grace periods and how amazing they will be for retailers. The jury is still out. First, the latest developments on what's happening in Northern Ireland in terms of the implementation on the protocol, and then further deferral of inbound GB customs and other checks for goods coming from the EU. We'll also look at last week's trade figures from the UK and elsewhere to see what picture they paint of the early weeks outside the EU customs union and single market. I'm joined as ever by Aidan Connolly, director of the NIRC. Aidan, how are you?
I'm absolutely fine. Thank you very much for asking.
And also the soon-to-be-departing William Bain, the BRC's trade policy advisor, who thankfully is still with us for a little while yet. William, how are you?
Very well, thanks. Thanks very
much. Don't leave me, William. Don't leave me.
So, Aidan, if we can start with you, the protocol is getting pretty messy now, isn't it? So enforcement action being brought by the European Commission. It's a very chilly start to the Lord Frost, Vice President Sefcovic relationship. What's going on there?
Well, it's really handbags at dawn. And yet again, the politics is getting in the way of a technical process. You'll have heard me say that many, many times over this past year of us doing these podcasts. And where we are really is in a case where the UK has taken unilateral action. It has enhanced the grace periods. It's extended the grace periods to the 1st of October for those SPS requirements and the 1st of November for partials. And if you look at the wording, it's then they're talking about phasing in. So the actual grace periods, depending on how they phase that in, could last a bit longer than that. Now the EU is up in arms. It is disgruntled. It is less than gruntled at all, and they are quite rightly annoyed that this has happened. My sort of thought on this is that there is a little bit of she doth protest too much, and the reason why we say that is that if you remember when the grace periods were announced on the 8th of December, and then the further detail came out on the 10th of December, we talked to the EU and we talked to the British government. We said, thanks very much, lads, but that's not going to be enough. And there was no way that there was going to be a system in place by the 1st of April. And then our members and the retail CEOs wrote to Michael Gove on the 22nd of January of this year, again, saying the same thing, that we had a big train hurtling down the tracks of us for the 1st of April, because then we would have needed those export health certificates. Those are costly, needs vets to sign them off, needs paperwork, needs man hours, and it would have been a game changer. Now, the EU said that no notice that this was going to happen. Now, we know that there was some discussion of it beforehand, that emails had been exchanged. We know that we had been brought it up, our members had brought it up. And if you remember, the reason behind, the principle behind those grace periods was so that there would be a new trading system in place that would remove friction GB to NI, that would allow us to keep choice and affordability for Northern Ireland households. That is not in place. So by that logic, then the principle for the grace periods still exists, and therefore we need an extension to the grace periods. Now, there are those within UKG who are saying, see, Northern Ireland business is completely behind us and what we did. We're there. We're with you when it comes to the substance, because that's what we've been asking for. We said that the grace periods would need extended because there is no system in place to facilitate that trade GB to NI. What we're not okay with is how it's done. And all of these things are always done better on a bilateral basis, done through the Joint Committee. That's what it's there for. However, we met with four or five weeks ago, we met with Michael Gove and Vice President Sefcovic, And we had said to them that, guys, we really need this. And it was one of the four key asks, if you remember, stability from that extension to the grace period, certainty from a long-term workable solution, simplicity, things like digitization, veterinary agreement, and affordability so we can do it to keep costs down for Northern Ireland consumers. So we had got that message very strong over to both UKG and to Vice President Shostakovich of the EU. We actually thought that with all the good music that there was, that we would see a movement on that at the Joint Committee, and it didn't happen. And it didn't happen. And we were so genuinely disappointed because we in business in Northern Ireland, we in retail in UK who supply Northern Ireland, really did put our faith in the process, and it didn't work out. So I think the big headline is that the EU are very annoyed about it. The UKG are indignant that they have done the right thing, and we're caught in the middle saying, guys, the politics is getting in the way of the technical stuff, and we still need a long-term solution. So we're pushing back on the UK, saying, yeah, we support that you have done it. We would have liked you have done it another way. But our big push now is, what are the milestones? Don't use this just to kick the can down the road. We need to find out how this is going to translate into that long-term workable solution that is designed with business.
So how useful are the grace periods for Northern Ireland retail? Will they put in place a longer-term solution on protocol compliance processes? Or are we going to be back in this exact same position in 6 months' time?
That is quite the question, William. That's well done you. I think where we are with this is that they were needed. The unilateral decision to extend the grace periods was taken on the Wednesday. And that Friday, there were retailers who were going to have to take decisions that would affect supply to Northern Ireland on the 1st of April. You got to remember, retail is not a light switch. You can't turn it on and off. You need several weeks, if not longer, to switch around supply chains, to order things up, even and to look at changing your delivery point and where you're actually getting things from. So that all needed to be done. You know, so there was an urgency to the decision that was made. As far as the long-term solution, that's what we're continuing to work with all of parts of government who are involved in this. We're working with BEIS, we're working with the Northern Ireland Office, we're working with Cabinet Office, we're working with DEFRA, we're working with DERA in Northern Ireland, we're working on things like the Digital Assistance Scheme. And you know, that is our big pushback. You know, you guys have given an extension now, which is great. There would have been a lot of trouble. It would have affected affordability and choice for Northern Ireland consumers. But we need to see what that long-term solution is. And, you know, I have to say, we were, you know, both myself and William were quite vocal whenever we weren't getting that sort of good level of engagement from UKG last year on the Northern Ireland issues. And now they're throwing the kitchen sink at it. We're talking to the HMRC a couple of times a week. We're talking to DEFRA, we're talking to DERA, we're talking to BEIS. And there are, you know, there's lots of toing and froing here. Unfortunately, a lot of the answers are still, we're still working on that, we're still working on that, we're still working on that. And I think the big message that we have across the board to not only UKG, but to the Northern Ireland Executive as well, because you've got to remember that they have responsibility for building those border control posts, etc. The big message that we have for all of those people is, please, tell us how and when it's going to happen. You need to change that we're working on it to we have done it. And that's going to be key for that second point of certainty that Northern Ireland business and those people who supply Northern Ireland are going to need too sweet, as they say.
So we've also just had, since St. Patrick's Day, obviously a big event globally, but particularly stateside. How is all of this going down with the Biden administration in the United States?
Well, it's a rather large lead balloon. I think, you know, the Irish American caucus, the Irish American lobby is one of the strongest in the US. It punches well above its weight. Joe Biden himself has connections with Ireland, and you know has commented on it many times with his vice president and his and in the run up to becoming president. So I think, you know, they are very cognizant of what's going on. They're very cognizant that they have a part to play. We recently were talking to some American officials, and yeah, they do get it. I think though, this is again where the politics is getting in the road, because they're hearing from UKG, and to be honest, some of the things that have come from UKG openly haven't been hugely useful when it comes to the American sphere. But they're also hearing from Ireland and the EU, Simon Coveney, who's the Irish foreign minister, and Vice President Shevchevich from the EU were in front of the Irish caucus last week for St. Patrick's Day. And you know, they were laying it on very, very thick about the breach of international law, about protecting the Good Friday Agreement, and, you know, all the greatest hits that you've heard since the start of the year. Now, again, for us, it's incumbent on us to try and cut through both sides. It's like the old divorce adage. It's he said, she said, and then there's the truth. And we are kind of as business people, we are talking to some of the Americans. We are trying to get that sort of pragmatic and realistic idea out there. It's not as bad as either side is painting, but there are challenges, and we need an awful lot of support to do that. I think it's going to be more interesting as President Biden starts to flex his foreign affairs muscle. You know, his early foray into that with Syria, you know, got a lot of pushback. I do know that he's very interested in the Balkan states. He's very interested in Ireland, and very keen to prove his bona fides as a world leader. So we're waiting to find out if there's going to be a special envoy to Northern Ireland, as there has been before. Who that will be very important, even personality wise, to see how they drive forward that US. Arbiter of common sense, shall we say, or impartial arbiter in the EU, UK, Northern Ireland stuff. But quite simply, we haven't had any sort of official pronouncements from the US on this yet. So we await with bated breath.
So William, turning to you now, we've got Northern Ireland grace periods, but also Great Britain inbound grace periods on EU goods. So what are the main points and key future dates to look out for here? And are these grace periods just going to continue to get extended, or what's the deal there?
Sure. So effectively, everything's been pushed back 6 months. So we were going to see on the 1st of April the requirement for EU suppliers to pre-notify any movements of products of animal origin, everything from milk to yogurt to sirloin steaks and fillets of fish, to be pre-notified 24 hours before those goods would move from the EU to GB. And the paperwork for those movements, export health certificates, was going to be required from the 1st of April too. So that has been deferred now until the 1st of October. Also, we've seen a deferral of the sort of date in which companies will start to have to produce safety and security certificates in terms of movements of products from the EU into GB. That's now been moved back to the 1st of January 2022. And also, there is an extension of the easement whereby supplementary customs declarations can be made within 6 months of the goods arriving in the UK. Now, this does not mean that companies have got until the 1st of January next year to submit supplementary declarations for goods that arrived in, let's say, February of 2021 in GB from the EU. But what it does mean is it extends by a 6 month period the six-month grace period that companies have to submit their supplementary declarations. So I think broadly, these measures are being welcomed by business. I think there was very much a sense that the infrastructure at ports was not completely ready. The processes and the IT systems certainly weren't completely ready from a company's point of view. So extra time for everyone to prepare. But, you know, the question is, even in October and even in January, are things going to be ready to go? I mean, you're dealing with hundreds of thousands of small suppliers based in the EU who will be looking to send goods in. At the moment, those goods are flowing straight across without any checks or significant red tape. We're still seeing a fall in the amount of goods which are coming over, but it would be a very different world if and when those border controls come on stream. Now, in terms of whether these could be permanent, then I think you've got to sort of look at what the WTO rules on all of this might say and the overarching most favoured nation MFN principle. Clearly, if there was a sort of permanent advantage being given to EU goods that was not being given to other countries' goods, then that could create some problems for the UK at the WTO in Geneva in terms of explaining that one away. So it is likely that these are going to be temporary measures pursuant to the introduction of the regional trade agreement, TCA. And so therefore, on a temporary basis, these easements would be permissible.
So, William, we've also had recent trade figures in which have painted a pretty grim picture of the effects for retailers and other businesses of the border controls, COVID-19, and also obviously lack of consumer demand. Which aspects of these has most concerned you?
Well, it still exercises a degree of caution around these figures because, as you say, they do factor in things like the reduction in demand over the ongoing COVID-19 outbreak. We've also got the element of stockpiling that was going on both sides of the English Channel immediately prior to the end of the transition period. You know, there's other temporary factors, you know, shipping costs, which can contribute to this. But nevertheless, there in January was an unprecedented picture. And it will be interesting to see whether it comes back at all when we get the February stats. But just to give some examples, so UK goods exports to the EU fell by 38% in January 2021 compared with the previous year, down from 13 billion to 8 billion. And that compares with only an 8% drop in non-EU goods exports, falling between January 2020 and January 2021. So there is quite a factor there, you know, which one can only attribute to the red tape and the extra costs of having to get goods out of the UK. Now, in terms of imports from the EU to GB, these fell by 28.8%. in January 2021 compared with the previous January. In terms of goods specifically, there was a 16% fall in goods imports over the same period. But if we look at some of the individual country data, it really is quite extraordinary. So, you know, some of the trade figures from the EU27 have been coming out, and UK exports to Germany fell 56%. In January 2021, in comparison with the previous January, 70% in Italy, and of course, from late last week in Ireland, Republic of Ireland, down 65%. So there may be a bit of a bounce back as the COVID situation slowly improves, as consumer demand improves a little bit. But clearly some of this effect is going to be permanent, and it does show that, you know, there may be similar numbers of lorries moving between GB and EU, but the question is, how much goods is actually within them, because there seems to be a lot less trade going on after the TCA has come in.
And also last week saw the publication of the UK government's integrated review on foreign and security policy, which had a section on trade. What hints did that document offer in terms of how UK trade policy might look in a few years' time?
So a very interesting document, pulling together work being done by many government departments and by Number 10 over several months. I think the key elements of it were the pivot to Indo-Pacific. They see this as being the high growth area when it comes to global trade. They want to obviously accede to CPTPP, the 11 country trade agreement covering about 13% of global trade. They're also looking at other trade agreements once this first tranche is completed with Australia and New Zealand, and who knows, maybe even the US as well. So looking at the Gulf states, looking at potentially India, but India, notoriously difficult for countries to get trade agreements with. The clear quid pro quo would be services exports for greater labour mobility into the UK in terms of such a deal. So you can see a clear geostrategic, geopolitical and economic shift away from Europe and towards Indo-Pacific. Now, the question is, that is fine on desks in Whitehall, but how does it work in the real world where, you know, most trade is still being done between the EU and the UK? And the document was very thin on what it said about the EU-UK relationship going forward. But nevertheless, you can see that they are going to seek to pivot more into the Pacific. Now, that's fine if you're selling goods which are ambient, fine if you're selling non-perishable, non-food goods. Very difficult, however, if you're selling fresh produce into those markets, if you're doing so at the expense of the EU market. So I thought it was an interesting document. I think there were some very positive things about how they'll work with others to reform the World Trade Organization, get the decision-making processes working. Lots of good ambition on digital trade and improving e-commerce. So clearly they need to work with a lot of partners in other parts of the world to make this happen. We will see how they get on in the next few years. But I think perhaps business would want to see just a little more in terms of how they're seeing the relationship with the EU developing, which is still our most important one for trade and in other areas.
Excellent. And I think that is where we will leave the discussion for today. So we will be back after Easter. But if you would like to find out more about the work that we all do at the BRC, you can visit us at brc.org.uk. You can also continue the conversation with us on Twitter. Aidan, on Twitter, you are?
Michael Aidon, at MICHAELAODHAN. Or just look up Aidan Michael Connolly and we'll find it.
Excellent. And William on Twitter?
At William_Bain.
Fantastic. Thanks, guys. That's all from us today. Goodbye for now.